This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yes. I was invited to a wedding in Mauritius yesterday.
Ooh,
I mean, I'd love to go. I can't go. It's at a time of year that I know I'm going to have other things on. I might actually even be traveling somewhere else, but I just thought suddenly, it'd be nice. Huh?
When is it?
April.
Sia will go for you.
Yeah, Sia
will go on your behalf.
I'll deputize Sia.
You just wear a sash saying Gareth Cliff.
I don't even know the couple.
Do you know what I found the other day? I found the Mr. and Miss Gareth Cliff paraphernalia. Like I found this box of crap at home. I was cleaning out, and then it had all that stuff from the pageant that we had in our first year here, or it was the last year at 5FM. I can't remember. Remember when we had the dwarf, and we had the Miss Gareth Cliff, and we had the special talent show, and all of that stuff. It was like a mini circus that we put up in Sandton City.
Wow, so that was 2013, probably.
Must have been somewhere around there. It was bizarre. So much fun. I made Jen Sue the MC. And we had people who could bend their elbow the other way. And just a whole series of really bizarre talents. It was fantastic.
What did you do with all of that?
I put it back in the box and I'm going to send it off to charity, because what am I going to do with it?
What's charity going to do with it?
Well,
it's better use at the Mauritius wedding.
Yeah, they could probably use it for, I don't know, reconstitute it into some kind of patchwork something. I don't know. No idea. I haven't thought about that. That's not my business.
We can bring it here. Stock it up somewhere.
Duncan says, "Hey, Gareth, I've noticed the messages are not delivering via Telegram, and WhatsApp says you've been offline for a week." No, Duncan. I just got a message from Migs now.
Yeah, Duncan, don't draw too much into the WhatsApp, because it's a screen. It's not a phone or a person. So people always look at that double tick and that kind of crap.
Yeah. You expect it to be
one
like
tick.
You think it's like, one of your friends, and if they don't, if they single tick you, that they've blocked you or whatever.
Yeah, we don't like pull the screen out of our pockets. It's there, and we don't block people.
Migs says this morning, "Thank you for introducing me to her." Say It Again was played at 6 o'clock today. Thanks again. Yeah, her. I think you mean the movie. What a great movie! It's very, very clever.
Or it could be an artist. If Migs is saying it was played at 6, yeah, there's a new artist by the name of H.E.R.
Oh, because I watched Ready Player One over the holidays, which I thought, you know, her is the story about this robot, which, you know, it's like a person, but the consciousness is online. It's in a machine.
Oh?
Yeah, fascinating. And Ready Player One is the Steven Spielberg-directed movie. I don't know if you saw that, but where everybody has a VR headset and a VR bodysuit and a VR set of gloves, and they basically can go into this virtual reality world, which I don't think is that far-fetched. I think it's probably about 10 years away. And you live in this VR world, which is completely authentic and programmed to be tactile and programmed to make you feel like you're actually in it. You have an avatar, and you compete in games and quests, and, you know, it's kind of like an amalgamation of all these brilliant online and multiplayer universe games. It's a great movie. I'd seen it before, but I'd forgotten how good it was. I think it's not even that old. Can't be.
Is this VR world culturally sensitive and naturally represented by all race, colors, and creeds?
Well, you see what's nice about that. Because
I don't want to be a part of it.
No, all of that shit's going to fall away. I mean, all this politically correct nonsense is already starting to die a slow and painful death. And you can see it, because people are just not interested anymore. I mean, again, we're getting to a point now where people are becoming increasingly insensitive. I love it. Yesterday with the 10-year challenge, I was getting 10-year challenges of Bruce and Caitlyn Jenner, which is hilarious. It's always hilarious. I mean, you could bring your politically correct, gender fluid, whatever it is, stuff. But most people on earth don't give two shits about that stuff. They really don't. They're like, what the hell? Is that a man or a woman? That's how most people are. I've tried to be sensitive about it.
Is it a man or a ma'am?
A man or a merm.
Shame, guys.
Gillette put out this ad that...
Well, obviously Gillette didn't do it.
Well, there's this cultural... toxic masculinity that they're trying to fight as well.
And yeah, I haven't watched it yet. Have you?
No, I don't care.
Okay.
I really don't. But now a lot of men are like, well, fuck Gillette. We're not going to support them anymore because we're not all toxic masculinity and blah, blah, blah. You know, someone sent me a really cool meme about this woman's comment on Facebook. Like, oh, men... Whatever. Now, you know, she may be a woman who's had a tough time, or she may have been with a really awful guy. In fact, that's definitely what happened. And the meme is something like, it's a screenshot of her comment about, you men are all assholes, or you've got to learn to treat women properly, or whatever it is. And then a guy replies to her. It's obviously in her Facebook feed. Guy replies to her, no, Denise, that is Tim27 from Midrand. The rest of us have nothing to do with him or his behavior or your behavior with him. Mm. Please don't include us. Which is the whole point, right? I mean, if you collectivize people, then you end up in trouble. And it's fun to watch how this thing is spiraling out of control now, because identity politics has had its time and now it's over. And the idea of people lumping you into a group and assuming that that is who you are and what you stand for is just deeply insulting, and for most people, extremely patronizing. In fact, it's the very definition of racism and of sexism. Because you are a woman, you will think this way. Because you are black, you will think that way. Because you are white, you will think this way. It's ridiculous. I mean, that's exactly the fundamental idea upon which things like apartheid were built, is that all black people can fit a stereotype, all white people can fit a stereotype. It clearly doesn't apply. If you don't have respect for the individual, it's never going to work. And that's the problem with collectivism of any kind, including when the state at the top end gets involved in it. But it is falling apart, like that castle's starting to crumble. And I like that. So the multiverse that I'm talking about in this game is a multiverse where you can be whoever you want to be. And it doesn't matter. People can... choose to associate you with you or not. There's no overarching government online. There's no virtual reality authority. There are rules to the game, but if you don't play by the rules, then your character suffers accordingly. And the rules are simple. It's like you've got to try and survive. You've got to try and gather some material possessions, some weapons, some coin. You got to try to make sense of the environment around you, and then have fun. Effectively, most people will end up living in this virtual world a lot more of the time than they will in the real world.
Hmm.
So it's an interesting paradigm to shift your head into. If there is a virtual universe for you to escape into, because the real world is just awful. Let's imagine your real world is, you're a single mom, you work 12 hours a day, You have to cook and clean and look after the kids at the same time. You don't necessarily earn a lot of money. Let's say you could escape into this virtual world for 3 hours.
And there are no parameters to this virtual world. It can be whatever,
anything,
wherever anything you want.
In this virtual world, you can go and sleep on a beach. In this virtual world, you could fight a war. In this virtual world, you could design a building and build it in for you virtual reality. You can inhabit spaces that were uninhabitable. You can fly. You can fight. You do whatever you want. It would become a very interesting and alluring place for a lot of people. If your world is difficult, it would be a great way to escape that world. And maybe you'd end up spending incrementally or exponentially, depending on how much time you got, more and more time online. But it's something to think about because it's not that far away.
I never thought of how virtual reality could actually be a savior for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You look at how many people are depressed or unhappy or complain about their lives. And actually, well, let me just sit at home physically in a room alone, but with this device on, I am experiencing total bliss.
And imagine you could be a number of different people. Let's say you felt like being some kind of sports star the one day. The next day you felt like being an opera singer. The next day you felt like being a sci-fi superhero. The next day you felt like being a god. You could do all of that. You'd play all those roles, and you could develop all of those characters concurrently if you want to. I mean, it's a. This is not un.
And you think it's not far-fetched? No, like 10 years?
No, no. I reckon.
Well, with, if you got within, the money within
the next 10 years, it's going to be. It's going to become fairly ubiquitous. This is the next big area of development. I mean, the real world, the interfaces we've got now have kind of reached a plateau. If you think about cell phones, we spend a huge amount of time on our phones. And we discussed just the other day how Generation Z kids cannot read facial expressions and body language anymore. did I mention this to you?
No. Okay, so no,
this is really interesting.
The
so,
end is nigh.
Yeah, so breakups are only going to be on text from here on
this
in.
Is
I'm
it?
Sorry.
This really? Is it. So kids who were born after 1995, so that includes, well, maybe you just fall into millennials. I'm not sure about you, Sia, but after millennials come Gen Z, right? Mm-hmm. And these are the people who are at varsity at the moment or at high school in high school at the moment, and they are on their devices more than they are dealing with people one-on-one in reality. In first world countries, obviously. So, you know, this in some ways gives us an advantage. We always talk about how we're behind. But actually, we might be better at reading things like those telltale signs that there is danger on the way or that someone likes you or that someone's genuinely and affectionately caring, or whether they're shutting you out by crossing their arms. Gen Z kids can't read this in some places. They spend so much time online. They use emoticons. They use voice occasionally for voice notes and things, but it's usually just text.
Mm. The irony
is
that
they communicate.
That people who use the crying, laughing emoji have probably never ever shown so much emotion ever in their life.
Mm-mm. So when they're sitting opposite each other, it's tremendously intimidating.
Yeah,
they don't know how to have a date. They don't know how to make that first move.
This is sad.
And you combine that with all of this Me Too stuff and general social anxiety, which is through the roof.
Toxic male.
Right. Well, it's through the roof. But even for girls, because they've been led to believe by this propaganda around Me Too, which has got completely out of control, that every man is an aggressive twat who's trying to rape you. So there's just no in-between. I feel so sorry for anyone who's going to try to have a normal, in inverted commas, relationship from now on, because you won't be able to meet someone under hashtag normal circumstances. You won't be able to connect with them in a physical realm, in the real world, like our parents' generation might have, or even we might do. They're having less sex than any generation
that we can measure. Oh, now that is the...
That's scary, right?
That is the protest.
So even though their attitudes to sex are a lot more liberated and open,
mm-hmm.
the actual opportunities for sex are much diminished because they're so nervous about being around each other, being judged. You know, they want to keep the fantasy alive in text. They want to deal with things at an arm's length almost, because then they can control it. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on right now that is already leading us into that world of VR. And it's
so these kids growing up now are being set up fantastically for that world, if you think about it.
Yeah, well, but being fantastically set up for a VR world is crippling in a real world.
Yes.
Completely.
And that's why you've got to either find that magic balance, which I don't know. I don't think a lot of people are capable of that. People can't even find balance in their work, home life.
Mm.
People can't even find balance in their relationship, friend life. People can't find balance in their holiday work life. It's very difficult for people to obtain balance because it's such a subjective thing, and you have to move the tiniest thing from this side to that side to make it work. And even the most brilliant people I know struggle to balance the different aspects of their lives. So either you're going to be a genius and you're going to crack that balance between the virtual world and the real world, or you're going to find yourself slightly more in one than the other. And if you're more in one than the other, the cost is that the other becomes a place where you're a little debilitated. You're almost disabled.
But you want to be disabled virtually. See, the big problem this always comes back to is
I think you're right. I think you do want to be disabled virtually rather than in reality.
Because I think in the virtual world, you never have to be accountable for stuff. Like that show Westworld showed us. Westworld was a great show in many respects because you can go there and humans default to this dreadful behavior. Whereas real life, you've got to be accountable. You've got to actually understand how things work and you've got to then compromise how, who you are as a person.
Well, in Ready Player One, there is a cost. So you, whatever you gather in your virtual life, whether it's coin or whether it's weapons or whether it's armor or whether it's a vehicle or whether it's a lifestyle online,
mm-hmm.
In the virtual world, you lose all of that if you are killed or if you're shot or if you do something stupid or if someone takes you down or whatever it might be. So you lose everything and you have to start again, which is fine. You get an extra life. You get to start again.
There's always an extra mm-hmm. life, yeah.
But your character is back to zero. So you have to start building it. So it does teach you about, you know, accumulating and growing and adding value and all of that stuff. So it's not as if it doesn't have virtual world costs. It doesn't have real world costs, but not virtual world costs. I mean, when someone punches you in the face in the virtual world, you don't feel it like you do in the real world. That's the truth. So if you walk up to someone who's bigger and stronger than you in the virtual world and you say, "Hey, you asshole," and they punch you, your character is going to go, "Oh, that hurt," on the, you know, the hurt scale, which will be on the left-hand side of your visor or whatever. But you're not going to feel it like you would if you actually walked up to a real monster in the real world and they hit you.
Oh,
you'd be out like a light. There'd be real world pain.
I don't know.
But it is interesting. I mean, in this, they wear these body suits, mm-hmm. which are haptic. So they feel, you know, if I kick Ben in the balls in the game, then he would feel
in my real person, in my real balls.
You'd feel it, but not to the extent of the real world. I mean, you can tone it down, so you'd be able to choose your level of
different settings. I'm playing advanced, so if you kick me in the balls, it's really gonna hurt.
So you could turn your pain up to full, for example. But some people they'd use emotion control, so their character would be a lot more controlled than their real person. You know, they'd just dial down all of their emotions. It's fascinating. This is the way the world's going to work for us one day. And you do have to choose at some point which is the real you, the online avatar or the real world you. And sometimes the real world you is kind of boring because you don't have powers.
Well, also you don't have resources. I mean, this virtual world, you can build up this wealth and you can build up things and you can have stuff. Whereas mm-hmm. a lot of people feel like they can't get that. And there's various reasons why people obviously are essentially poor in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel that that is their destiny. They can't get out of poverty and those kind of things, whether it be social or financial poverty.
Well, it's just really interesting that the ANC had their birthday the other day. Gosh. And
here we go. Mm-hmm. Conversation back 100 years.
I know, but this is you bring it to this. But the entire thrust, as I understood it, of Cyril's speech was all these terrible things are happening to you. None of it is your fault. Mm-hmm. We'll make it better.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the classic Oedipus, the father who's going to come in and solve all of your problems, the wise king, right? By Oedipus, I mean like the mother as well, because this is the overprotective mother. I'll don't worry, darling, I'll protect you from the world. And this is bad. This is very, very bad. What it's doing is it's increasing the lack of accountability and responsibility within the population, because if you make them, if it's not their fault, they can't hold you accountable.
Yeah.
This is all just a ploy to get hold of your stuff. This is what the classic governments of the world have always tried to do, particularly left-leaning socialist governments. They just want your stuff. They just want your stuff. They want the lucre. Look what's happened in Zimbabwe now. I mean, you heard Gilmore yesterday.
Jeez.
Telling us how people are now, they finally decided they're not supporting businesses that politicians took over. Finally, they've decided that that's not. These politicians have been hoodwinking the population and a smart population in Zimbabwe for the longest time because they've promised them, we'll solve your problems. Now, let me be clear about this because maybe nobody's told this to you before. No one is interested in solving your problems except you. You are the number one person to solve your problems. There is no way that an elected official gives a damn about the problems that you have in your life. They don't care that you don't have enough money. They don't care that you can't provide for your family. They don't care that you hate your job. They don't care. What they want is your stuff. As little as it may seem to you, they want it all. And they start with tax. They say, I'm going to take half of what you earn.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put into my coffers. And what happens after that is none of your business. Why? Because I have a monopoly on violence. I've declared the law on my side that I'm allowed to come after you if you don't pay that tax. It's theft at the barrel of a gun. And then that's where it starts. That's where it starts. It gets a whole lot worse. Then it's ESCOM and it's e-tolls and it's municipal rates and taxes. And it's, you have to pay this for your license or your ID. Or there's 1,000 things they put there. That's all about getting your stuff. So you might want to live in the real world, but that's what you're going to deal with, is people like that who've made the system work for them. And good for them. That's clever. Only way out of it is to take responsibility for yourself or to get online in a virtual game and live there for your entire life. And what's interesting about this movie, again, is that it basically, the bad guys in the movie are like this online cartel that will give you coin. Mm-hmm. They'll give you whatever you need online in terms of, because you need to buy this stuff. It's not for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
well, nothing is in life ever should be.
It's a freemium model. So you enter, your character enters that world naked, and you have to find everything. You have to buy your own vehicle. You have to arm yourself. You have to decide your adventure, whatever it is you want to do. But you're going to need stuff.
Mm.
And this company will provide you with that stuff. You just have to pay them back later on. So guess what they are? They're the online government. Mm. Never going to get away from this stuff.
Because
there's always going to be someone who will solve your problems for you if you're prepared to let them. They'll promise to do that. They'll never deliver, of course. But they'll promise, I'll solve your problems. So it's an interesting new conundrum that we're going to have once we do go online. Is who are the bad guys going to be? Who should you be aware of? Who should you be scared of? Who's going to try and control you online?
I never really paid much attention to this movie. I think I should then.
It's a good movie.
It was released in 2018.
Yeah, it's very good.
But just touching on politics, are we going to get any of these putzers in this year with it being an election year? Are we going to make a play for any interviews?
Who are they, Ben?
These political putzers.
Do you know what I want to do with them?
Call it what you want.
I want to get kids to ask them questions. Because first of all, kids are going to ask them the questions that they really should be asked. And second of all, if they lie to children, we know what the quality of their character is. If they lie to an adult, so if they lie to an adult, you know that's part of what politicians do. But if they lie to children, then they really are shitheads. So I'm going to put them in front of kids, the only audience that really matters. And let the kids just have a go at them. Imagine that. Wouldn't that be fun? So Mig says, Gareth, don't forget to tell Ben and Sia the future depicted in Ready Player One is fucked. Environment has gone to shit just like in Idiocracy.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. It is. It's horrible. For most people, it's horrible. But then that's the way the world is now. I mean, if you went back in time and you said to people, one day you'll be living in cities, living on top of each other, you'll have no space. You might have gadgets and things, but you'll never, if you told your ancestors, you'll never actually hunt your own meat, they'd be horrified. wouldn't have space. You wouldn't be able to roam wherever you wanted to. You wouldn't be able to cross borders. They'd go, borders? What are borders?
Yeah, you think about it. If it wasn't for the virtual world, we would actually be screwed right now with how we have no space. Because we have these distractions like our phones and the mm-hmm. screens and stuff. If we didn't have that, we would be looking and going, why is this person so close to me?
Precisely.
But I think as long as we still have the option. And I guess, though, you can opt into a virtual world or not. Same way you can opt to live off the grid if you really want to.
You can. Choice, yeah. You
grow
can.
Your and armpit that, hair.
And grow your armpit hair.
Oh.
One of the
you
reasons...
may look archaic,
I mean, that's a current social media trend I don't care for.
Which one?
This.
I don't care if you're a man, a woman, a wolf. I don't want to see your armpits, let alone your armpit hair. It's just not a good thing. There's so many things that the eye can meet on a daily basis that will have you in wonder or awe, but armpit hair.
Oh, God, and Ben.
For some people, that was a trigger. That's the big win.
And hairy legs.
Hairy legs are a big win for some people, Ben. They love it. They do love their hairy legs. All right, let's get into some news.
What did we get started here?
Armpit hair and hairy legs. All right, but you can choose. That's the main thrust of the argument. So Patricia DeLille's exit from the DA, according to Musi Maimane, has not divided the party. Yeah, and you've been a great leader too in Cloud Cuckoo Land. He's living in the virtual world, isn't he? In Musi's virtual game, everything is going swimmingly. In the real world, you're about to face an election where you're going to lose a huge number of votes. Where people who thought Patricia de Lille had a valuable role to play are going to vote somewhere else. Where a whole lot of people who are sick of your ANC light mix are going to move away. I have not met anyone in the last 6 months. Not one person. People talk to me about politics, even though I don't want to talk about politics. Mm-hmm. And they go, huh, what do you think of the DA? Not one person has said, I'm so impressed with them. They're doing so well. I can't wait to vote for them in the elections. Not one person has said any of those things.
It's not about that. This is politics. No one is going to impress us. Take the least shit one. South Park told us a long time ago.
So this is, they're not even the least shit one at this point.
They're the only ones that care about your property.
Well, that's a good point, but I don't even think that they're the best at that, because
it's them or Cope. What are you going to do?
I feel like Cope have stood up stronger against this attack on property rights than they have. The DA leader has flatly denied his party's handling of the removal of former Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille has divided the party. On Monday, Musi Maimane told the Cape Town Press Club the DA is committed to holding its public representatives accountable, even when it appears not to be politically expedient to do so ahead of a crucial election. We had to get over last year. I make no apologies about it. It was always difficult. But one thing is for sure, having got through that, our focus now is one SA for all. You got all your work ahead of you, my friend. Gauteng's ANC has kicked off voter registration in the West Rand. Oh, this is exciting.
Hey, ANC, on the campaign trail.
Yeah, they're on the campaign trail to get residents to register during the final voter registration weekend of 26 and 27 Jan. That's 2 weeks from now, right?
Yep.
Following the launch of the ANC's election manifesto in Durban over the weekend, the Gauteng leadership has hit the ground in the West Rand, because that's, of course, where things are very, very tight. Ekurhuleni and the West Rand. West Rand went to, I think, what did they call it? Gauteng West or Krugersdorp or whatever it is. That went to the DA by a very narrow margin in the last elections. So they know that it's very close.
So get these people in the bag and you're good.
That's right. Provincial Executive Committee member Park Stau, who's the former mayor of Johannesburg, says there's a reason why they've started in this region. We continue to receive massive support from this community, and we thought that it was important that we launch our campaign to start here and express our appreciation to this community for their support. So basically, you support us, guess what? We'll come and launch there for you. And by the way, people of the West Rand, that's about as much as you're going to get from the ANC, because once that election happens, they're not going to come and pay any attention to you ever again.
Yeah.
And then the murder case against popular hip-hop artist Pitch Black Afro has been postponed once again to allow the state to conduct interviews with his family.
Max, this story just came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't even know about this.
Oh, well, Pitch Black Afro was, you know, big in hip-hop and Guaido back in the day.
I remember Pitch Black Afro.
I'd say easily a good 10 years ago. And over the festive season, we heard that his wife had passed away. There was even an autopsy that came off as declaring the wife dead from natural causes. And a couple of days later, after another investigation, it was actually revealed that the wife died from physical torture. And the case now has suspected that it was his husband, Pitch Black Afro, actually did it to him.
His real name is Tulangobo, and her name was Trisha Modisane. Her body was found in Johannesburg at a B&B last month. He's made his second appearance in the Joburg Magistrates Court, where his case has been postponed to Friday the 18th of January. What a story. What a story. Yo, okay, well, let's not read too much into that, because people are going to start saying, oh, well, musicians, but it's not. It's just Pitch Black Afro in this case.
And let's keep it together.
And then British MPs have voted overwhelmingly to reject Theresa May's Brexit deal. I mean, she's got to resign, right? Lawmakers in British Parliament voted overwhelmingly on Tuesday to reject the EU divorce deal struck between London and Brussels. In a historic vote that leaves Brexit hanging in the balance, MPs in Parliament's lower House of Commons voted 432-202 to reject the Prime Minister's agreement with the EU. The House has spoken. The government will listen, May said immediately after the vote. It is clear that the House does not support this deal, but tonight's vote tells us nothing about what it does support. Nothing about how or even if it intends to honour the decision taken by the British people to leave the European Union. Like I said before, you wouldn't want her job. Huh?
Mm-mm.
But if Theresa May gets, fired and she doesn't moonwalk out of 10 Downing Street, then what's the point?
Mm.
She has to leave with some
something
moves.
Iconic.
She has to leave dancing.
Oh,
she has to.
That dancing.
Do you want to choreograph something for her?
Or she does the robots in front of 10 Downing Street as she leaves.
I have to say that is one of the highlights of last year was Theresa May's dancing. Shit, it was bad. There's still people who support
I think it's
her.
One of the highlights of politics.
Yeah.
I mean, since Winston Churchill.
Wow.
What's really
Are
happened?
Are you really putting it up there?
Yeah. What's really happened with prime ministers?
Final story for the day. Gunmen blasted their way into a hotel and office complex in the Kenyan capital on Tuesday, killing 15 people and sending workers diving under desks to escape an attack claimed by Somalia's Islamist group Al-Shabaab. Nearly 11 hours after the assault began at Nairobi's upscale 14 Riverside Drive complex, bursts of gunfire and explosion were heard in the area, suggesting the situation was not yet under control despite government assurances. Whew. There's a number of things going on here that we have to be very, very careful of. There's this this continual sword of Damocles hanging over the heads of people in East and West Africa. In East Africa, it's Al-Shabaab. In West Africa, it's those, what do they call
Boko
them?
Boko Haram.
Boko Haram. It's this insidious threat of religious violence, which is medieval in its nature. I mean, it's like, you know, do what we say or we will kill you or convert you by the sword. That's kind of how it works. And then there's the fact that these states are incapable of defending people. Like, the whole reason you belong to a country is because they give you some sense of security, border security, personal security. We talked here the other day about how our police have admitted that they cannot protect us. So why bother having them? Why have a government at all? If your police can't protect you, get rid of the government.
Mm.
You don't need to pay for something like that, right?
Exactly.
So in Kenya, the government have admitted, the police have admitted, they can't control the situation. It took 18 hours for them to gain control of what was probably a handful of these militants.
Yikes.
In an upmarket part of town. I mean, we're not talking about warfare on the open field here. We're not talking even about warfare in a suburban sense. This sounds like it's a closed, contained complex. They didn't have the means to control this. It's a big worry. There's a hotel in there, there's a shopping center, and a handful of militants can come in with some guns and cause chaos. So there's something to think about. All right, those are the stories you need to know this morning. Let's get into some sport with Ben. Bitcoin 3647, that's $3,647, and Ethereum at $122. Ben, what do you have for us today?
Well, Gareth, ICASA wants to shake up the broadcasting of the top sports in South Africa. Stephen Kitsoff looking to be lured to England with lots and lots of money. And Harry Kane's gone till March. Let's start with Harry Kane because, hey, let's give something for the Spurs fans. It's not like they have much. And here we go again. This is what exactly going to happen. Their squad depth is going to be tested, and tested it is because Harry Kane is out with the ankle injury until March. So bye-bye Premier League, bye-bye Champions League. I mean, like, they're never going to win either one of them, mm-hmm. But this is just confirmation, basically. Kane looks set to return to training beginning of March, and obviously he says he's going to be training harder and faster and all those kind of things, do whatever he can to get back for his team. But league-wise, he's going to miss the game against Chelsea and against Arsenal, so two big games coming up. And there are, 7 points behind Liverpool currently? So I'm going to go with absolutely no. But what makes it even worse is that Song Heung-min is away on Asian Cup duty, so he's out as well at the moment. And the two of these players basically account for, I think it's 36% of all goals scored? No, wait, more. I had the stat. I had it right here. Absolutely lost it.
Song Heung-min.
Basically, Spurs are screwed. There we go. You probably see all that down without boring you with stats. So if you're a Spurs fan, I'm sorry, but it's not going to happen this year again. And thoughts and prayers to Harry Kane, although he is 25 and he's a multi-bajillionaire, so with good hair. So I mean, there's all so right. much, only so much sympathy you can really have for him. In rugby news, so talking about big money, Stephen Kitsoff, the fiery ginger, who in many ways is probably better than the beast and has shown this, and even has started to start for the Box. Of course, he was lured back from France by the Stormers / Western Province to play SA Rugby. Alistair Garcia believed he was the future at loosehead prop, and he very much is. I mean, this guy has been a fantastic performer for the Box this last year in 2018, and now English club Sale looks to be luring him with around 60 million rand.
Hmm.
You know how many rands that is? It's a lot. It's a lot of money. So his dad is speaking on his behalf, because players ultimately don't always talk about this kind of stuff, and nor should they, because they should focus on the playing side of things. The business side should be done with someone else. Keeps a clear head, you know. Keeps emotion out of things. He said, look, I mean, if someone in South Africa can make him a competitive offer, he will stay in SA. I mean, this is a guy who still likes to play with his mates and chill by the braai. So if he can stay in SA, he would prefer it. But when you're getting that much money, Sale Sharks look to have a penchant for these South Africans. Of course, that is where Faf de Klerk makes a lot of money. They've also got Rohan Jansen van Rensburg, Josh Strauss, John O'Ross, and they also are looking to basically have the Dupreer family. So that's Jean-Luc, Roberts, and Dan.
Hmm.
They're keen to have them. That's some of them really playing there on like little off-season stints. And they're also looking to lure Akka van der Merwe. So how about that? Sale Sharks, clearly they find the recipe for South African sports stars to be what they need. And after the World Cup, we will see a lot of shakeups like this. So I think a lot of the top box they're going to concentrate on, obviously, this year 2019, playing in SA. Obviously, Dwayne Vermeulen's come back. He'll be playing for the Bulls. And then post-World Cup, we are going to see basically a whole bunch of a mass exodus, which is fine, okay? It's totally fine because new players come through, and this is the circle of life. Elton John spoke about this. He predicted 2019, the player exits of the box. Of course, he used it in The Lion King, so maybe he was a bit of a Nostradamus in that sense, but we saw it coming, so don't act surprised. I tell you what, you will be surprised when suddenly SA sports fans aren't going to be able to watch the top sports in the world.
Why not?
Sounds very doom and gloom, doesn't it? I shall tell you for why. Because ICASA, who is the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, they want to shake up SuperSport's monopoly on all the best broadcasters of sport. Ah, good, you say.
Right.
Because the more people that watch sport in this country, the better it is, and all that kind of stuff.
See, nothing like letting a government agency decide what we should watch in our spare time.
But this is the whole thing, Gareth, is that we want more people to be involved in sport, and I'm a massive advocate for this, and I'm all for it. You know, when the SABC had the Mzansi Super League, that was a fantastic impact on cricket locally.
Sure.
Again, I'm all for that. But this is where the problem comes, because SuperSport have the best sports because it is a business. So they have clients who want the best sport. SuperSport go and source it, provide it for the clients, money changes hands. That's how it works. So if you, I mean, SuperSport, I would cock and block say, is probably the world's best when it comes to sport broadcasting. What we get here, and people bitch about it in South Africa for their 900 rand a month, whatever it is, the sport that you get is just absolutely unparalleled. The amount of Premier League action that we get in football, all the golf, all the cricket, all the rugby, curling at the Winter Olympics, which everyone loves so much. We've got
absolutely
the everything. SuperSport gives it to you as a package. So Castle was saying, well, it's just not fair, because how can SABC compete? Well, SABC can't compete, of course, because it's an absolute shithole organization that was being plundered by government cronies, so they're never going to be in a position where they can compete. So they can have the sob story of, oh, but we've got to bring it to the masses, and I totally agree with that, but where's the economics in all of this? I know people...
Who's paying?
This is the whole thing. So if SABC can't pay, SuperSport pays, and therefore SuperSport provides. But now ICASA is saying, well, you know, SuperSport can't have everything. So now what SuperSport have also got to do, and they've already started doing it, is that they're already kind of giving coverage, giving events to SABC to air.
That's
so
sad.
It's like the whole thing again.
It's like charity.
Private business is now always having to give the handout to government.
Always,
over and over and over and over. But this is another sort of potential problem with all of this. SuperSport is responsible for 54% of the PSL's annual earning. How about that? 54%. So these government authorities are saying, let's break up the monopolies, give it to the people. Fantastic. But then that in itself could actually kill sport. You take away 54%. Erwin Khoza is not going to do that. he's not going to have 54% of his money just go because, you know, he doesn't care about people watching this Numlazi or whatever.
No,
you don't
not.
Have Super Sport. No, you, give a, you couldn't give a flying fuck about all. That. Oh. So now you've got such an economics issue, but people are trying to make it this whole, well, everyone's entitled to shit. No one's entitled to anything. Vodacom and Telkom also made runs at getting broadcasting rights, obviously, through their networks, but they couldn't get it together. Facebook and Google globally are looking to do the same. So, look, the broadcasting model is being shaken up. We all know this. But let's not go into cuckoo land here and believe that things are going to be for free. It's very simple. Simple as that. So, ICASA, good luck in working this out, because MultiChoice, SABC, ICASA, they're all sitting around a table right now to work out how this works. But you take away broadcast rights, suddenly there is actually no sport. So there's a very long-winded definition of how economics and ideologies
come together.
Yeah, there we go. Oh. Andy Murray is still, of course, the big story of the Aussie Open. Basically, he did lose his first match against Batista Ugarte, Roberto, but a Spanish guy. So he then, in a very sort of teary and emotional week for Andy, he lost in 5 sets. Got to give him his credit. He fought for what he could, despite the fact that his body is no longer able to be the Andy Murray that he needs to be. And everyone's kind of writing him off, and he said, look, I'll make a decision about my retirement next week. But right now, he says, even walking the dogs hurts.
Wow.
He hates walking the dogs because it hurts. Imagine now playing tennis.
That's hard, huh?
And you look at the stop-start movement of tennis players. It's dreadful. It really is. It's all this back and forth stuff. It's terrible on your knees, terrible in your joints, and definitely on your dodgy hip. And he's got a very dodgy hip. But he's still got a good humor, and you can still follow him on Instagram and find some laughs out of him. I mean, Andy, we give him shit because he looks like that dour Scotsman who gets beaten by his mother. But none of that's actually true. He's actually a very warm-hearted guy. And I'm sure his mother's not so bad either. So that'll carry on. The Aussie Open is going full swing. No major results to speak of just yet, but I'll get to that later in the week. And Michael Schumacher's son, he is looking like he'll be accepted by the Ferrari Driver Academy soon. Now, this is a great sort of springboard towards bigger and better things. Of course, he won the Formula 3 recently. He's now going to be competing in Formula 2, which is the next step to Formula 1, obviously, if you go by the numbers, which is a great guide for you there. But it's a lot. Obviously, this guy's life is so tricky because, firstly, he must imagine how many times he gets asked, "How's your dad?" No one's seen his dad, Michael Schumacher, who turned 50 earlier this month.
Shame.
No one's seen him since he had that horrible skiing accident. Many believe that he's just a machine now. Maybe he's living in a virtual world, the only world that he can live in because his body's done.
I saw something about him on TV the other day, and like no one's seen him. People are very interested in whether or not he's able to walk again, what kind of a life he's got, whether he's conscious. Nobody knows.
Well, yeah, it is a shame. But this guy's life is obviously going to be under huge scrutiny right now. His career is going to be followed from step by step until he gets to F1. And then I think it'll only get more difficult for him. So he's following the path, though. It's also another bold step, is that it's always difficult to follow in the footsteps of your greats. I mean, look at Gary Player's kids. None of them amounts to anything because the pressure was just so great. And the fact that I don't think they tried really hard a couple of them.
Okay.
Well, they didn't need to. I mean, Gary provided so much. But now you got this kid in the shadow of Michael Schumacher. Plus, there's the mystery around how is Michael Schumacher doing. Interesting story, which we shall update over the years to come. Because let's be honest, we're all here together for sport, for podcasts, and for Cliff Central
Ben,
Sport. That's it for today.
Slight tangent. How long is the career of a racer or driver, F1 driver?
Until they hit the walls, yeah.
Because technically, do you have to exert yourself you're in a car? So you can
people often forget this, but some of the fittest sports stars in the entire world are race car drivers. Your body goes through so much stress and strain. I mean, you can lose something like up to 10 kilograms.
You've done go-karting, Sia.
Come on now. Is that a question?
Yeah, we've got to take you go-karting because you sweat like a motherfucker. Like, it's hard.
Oh. Yeah.
And that's a go-kart.
In an F1 race, you can lose up to 10 kilograms. Know what that does to your body. All the stress and strain, the G's on your neck and all that kind of stuff. So for a race car driver, you've got to be extremely fit. You've got to be relatively nimble, quite small. You can't be a big, burly person in there. Hugely fit.
You've got to be mentally
and
strong.
And you've got to be ballsy as all hell. Because you've got to be split-second emotions. You've got to be very clinical in what you do. So it's not an old man's game.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you look how old people drive. Some of them are grabbing onto that steering wheel like it's the last loaf of bread in the communist food aisle. And, you know, you need so much about you, your wits, your physical abilities. So I would say once you get into your mid-30s, you're done.
Okay.
Sure. Look, where's Rubens Barrichello right now? Where's Mika Häkkinen? All these guys, they get to the stage and they fall off.
Shame.
Okay. Just Googling oldest F1 Lewis competing Hamilton's drivers. They're people in their 50s, but these are like, you know,
but those
old records as well.
Those are back in the days when you stop at halfway for a champagne and some light sexual intercourse. Yeah, that was a very different
just
time.
A sprinkling of sexual intercourse.
Very different time before we were there.
Okay. A
sprinkling of sexual intercourse. That's beautiful. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ben. It's time for Said by Sia. Let's see what he has for us this morning. You know what Sia does? He finds these stories that make you feel a little bit more faith in humanity.
Yeah, this is such an awesome story, and as well because it's so close to home. For Joburgers, I think we really need to be saluting these two JMPD officers who came to the aid of a foreigner who needed help recently. So we hear of a lot of these schemes of people who get shipped to different countries thinking that they have a job, and then they get there and it's all been a hoax, or then, you know, something even more unfortunate happens to them. But luckily for this Mozambican man, he was promised a job in South Africa, and he traveled to Johannesburg and on a bus. And as he got to Johannesburg at Park Station, which is right in the middle of CBD, he had all of his bags with him. And right there and then, as he was waiting for these people who had promised him a job, firstly, those people didn't pitch up. And secondly, as he was waiting on the pavement, he was mugged and robbed of all of his belongings. And in a new country, don't have anything, standing around there, no one can help you. He didn't know who to reach out to. But luckily and thankfully, two JMPD officers. All we know so far are their surnames. So the one is Xaba Mzolo, and the other one is Officer Mofokeng, who happened to be on duty and driving around. They got to the scene of the crime a little after the fact and just saw this man looking very out of it and panicked. So they stopped and they actually wanted to find out what was going on. And that's when the Mozambican man, Antonio Mafulane, told them his story. And even though it's not in what they're meant to do with their job, but they actually took it upon themselves to help this man out. So they took Antonio to the local police station. They helped him open up an investigation and an affidavit on what had happened. But this is the kicker as well. More than that, after the investigation was done, it's still pending as we speak, they, out of their own money, decided to buy Antonio a bus ticket back home, get him some food and some new clothes as well. Sure. And I really think that's so cool. So
a local story, a JMPD people being the heroes. That's
shout
amazing.
Out to JMPD officers Xaba Mzolo and Mofokeng for really not even doing their job, but just being humans who care. They saw this panicked man, they found out more about his story, they helped that's them beautiful. Open up an investigation, and also paid for his bus tickets, his food and new clothes. I think it's really cool.
They're nice.
Oh yeah.
See, there are good people around.
Absolutely. That's your Said by Sia for this morning.
That's lovely, Sia. How nice. Huh?
Nice and heartwarming.
Yes. All right, when we come back, we've got a couple of news stories for you. We've got lots of other fun stuff. It's a Wednesday morning, cliffcentral.com. Don't go anywhere, of course. Gord Laws said he was going to join us next week because he only landed back from Barcelona last night. Ben, of course, has been very hard on him already, and rightly so.
I haven't been hard on him. I told him to enjoy his holiday. Not to stress. Don't rush.
I don't know so much, Ben. He felt like you were being mean.
Gareth, that's not my problem, though. I tell you what, I will say right now, that is not my problem. I looked, I checked up, it's not mine.
Thank you, Ben. All right, let's wrap this first hour of the Gareth Cliff Show up this morning. We've got loads more to come for you today. I hope you're having a great start to your day.
Now I am.
This is CliffCentral.com.